Hi there, I'm Ben Morton and welcome to my podcast. The aim of the show is to really dig into the art and science of leadership through interviews with MDs, CEOs and other senior leaders. In doing so, I'm going to try and decode and identify all of the things that we can do to become even better leaders for our organisations and for those people that we have the privilege and responsibility to lead. In this episode, episode number 4, I'm joined by Connor Pierce, who is the Corporate Vice President, UK and Ireland at Samsung Electronics. I've known Connor for the past 4 years or so now, so I can personally say what an incredibly energetic and results-driven leader he is, with an equally impressive track record of leading transformations and turnarounds all around the globe, but all within the telecoms industry. In this episode, we get to dig into his approach for leading these transformations with a really vivid metaphor that Connor shares of him being helicoptered onto a listing tanker in the middle of an ocean during a raging storm and having to provide hope and direction to the crew. Alongside that, we also discuss the need for continual learning and deep introspection as a leader, his belief that his job is to make himself redundant, and his strategies for managing his energy and keeping a sense of perspective. I know that you're absolutely going to love this episode, so without any further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Connor Pierce. So welcome, Connor. It's great to have you on the podcast. Thanks for your time and for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you. Nice to see you, Ben, again.
For those of you, for those people listening who don't know you and your background, can I start by just asking you to give us a little bit of your career journey, what you do right now, and a bit of your backstory?
I can, of course. My name is Connor Pearson, and currently I'm the Corporate Vice President for Samsung UK and Ireland. I joined Samsung back in February 2015, and it's been quite a journey. I'm sure I'll refer to that journey in the next few minutes. But just if I step back from that, you may hear from my accent, born and bred in Dublin, and I started my career a long time ago, sharing my age here, having done a degree in commerce in University College Dublin. And then I did a master's in international marketing in University College Dublin. That's back in the early 90s. But I remember when I came out of that, I went traveling for 2.5 years backpacking. Unemployment rate was very high, and I took the job that I was offered. There wasn't much choice available, and I started working as an insurance sales rep, more or less selling insurance door to door to primary school teachers in the west of Ireland. And it was a really an eye-opening experience for me. It was definitely humbling, having had my Bachelor of Commerce and my Master's, and there I was knocking on doors trying to sell AVCs and salary protection schemes to primary school teachers in rural Ireland in the early 90s. Was a hard landing, let's say, but I learned a lot from it. And from there, I worked in my father's company called Glenross Hosiery, which was a factory in northern Dublin. And he created this factory, and it made hosiery, socks, tights, etc., for sales in Ireland and also in Europe. And my experience there was quite interesting because whilst I had my degree and, of course, some insurance sales experience, he wanted to make sure I learned the business from the ground up. So I spent 6 months learning to put yarn into the machines, dye and iron the tights and pack them in warehouses. So very humbling, but I learned the business very well. And then I went on to become the sales and marketing manager for Europe for about 2 years. And then I joined the sector that I'm currently in by joining Ericsson back in the mid 90s. I spent a few years there. And then I think the most part of my career to date has been spent in Nokia, where I joined in 2004. Maybe earlier than that, but I spent 11 years in Nokia. Working in many markets, Dublin, and then I went to work in Dubai, looking after the Middle East, North Africa region, 22 markets. Before I went back to, I suppose, the focus of owning a P&L when I went to work in Turkey. I was the MD in Turkey. And then during the days when Nokia was in a very difficult position, I was asked to go and lead the business in UK and Ireland. So I moved to UK in 2011. And only a few months later did Stephen Elop announce that we were all on a burning platform. So incredible, an incredible transition for me and a journey. And then, as I said, I stayed there for a few years and transitioned that business over to Microsoft and joined Samsung in 15. So yeah, quite a very varied experience, but I've learned a lot from it, which is the most important part.
Wow, that's an incredible journey. As a result of all of that, I'm curious, how would you describe your leadership style, and how do you think that journey you've been on has shaped that style that you now have?
It's interesting. Yesterday I was asked to present to a group of colleagues in an internal Samsung talent program. And it gave me time to reflect on this particular question, which I shared also with the team. And I did ask them also to think about this. And in every role you've done and every company you've worked in, you should take that as an opportunity to do some self-reflection. What is it that I learned about myself that made me who I am today? And I have all those companies I just listed off and the roles that I was doing at the time. I certainly learned a lot. And I think I won't go through them all, but I'll pick one or two of them. When I was selling insurance thing back in the 90s, it's amazing to think how could that have such an impact on me now? But selling insurance is a hard sell, as you can imagine. And I was trained to sell it in a 10-point plan by the company I was working for. Just press play, you rehearsed it and you did your job and hopefully you get the appointment to close the sale. It didn't work. It didn't work for months and months and months. And I was scratching my head. My boss came out, "What's wrong with you? Why aren't you making any sales like other people?" And then the penny dropped for me. Let's try and do something different. So I ditched the suit, I ditched the 10-point plan, and I had a cup of tea. And basically, I built a relationship and I got them to trust me. And that trust has probably been the foundation of every conversation I've had in every company I've worked in. Because without that, you'll never progress. And it's very important for me to be able to trust the people I'm working with and the partners I'm working with. So that's certainly, it sounds quite obvious for me, of course, but that was a... I understand the depth of that from that experience. And then when I went through the experience of Ericsson to Nokia, I would say in hindsight, Apple did to Nokia what Nokia did to Ericsson. And the main learning there is the consumer. The consumer should be at the beginning, the middle, and the end of every decision you make. I think Ericsson was obviously top of the pile at 40% market share in the late 90s. Nokia came along and basically found out what the customer wanted and gave it to them. And that was simplicity. They wanted to accessorize their phone. And, you know, Ericsson had built an incredible portfolio, but very feature rich, tried to differentiate by adding features that were not necessary for the consumer. So stripping all that back, I think that was the beginning of the success of Nokia. And I obviously enjoyed that journey significantly. The consumer is my second learning. I think the third one, and probably I enjoy this a lot, is I'm probably attracted to environments that require a huge turnaround, a massive transformation, whether that's cultural, business, organizational, it doesn't matter. I enjoy that. So my experience when I was in Turkey was probably my first turnaround experience. It was really a business that was on its knees. I would say the same thing when I came to Nokia UK, because it lost hope. It lost motivation. The team had lost motivation, very poor morale, and they had no real relationship with customers. So it was a hard turnaround. But I'd learned, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But that turnaround strategy that I lean on in times of trouble, that stood to me so far. Fingers crossed. And finally, in my time in Samsung has been incredible, an incredible place to work. And I think to be successful in Samsung, you need to be relentless in pursuing progress, but not just for the sake of it. You do that based on deep introspection. What could I have done differently? And you also have to have this limitless approach, this boundless approach. There's no boundaries. What can we do together to connect the dots across this company? And I don't think I've worked in a company that has such a broad and deep portfolio. And my role now is obviously to do my day job, but what I'm really excited about is now being able to connect the dots so that we can have a really unveil this a very compelling ecosystem that Samsung has hidden away, an unpolished gem, if you like.
That's great, Connor. What always happens when I'm recording these podcasts is I have a whole list of questions I plan on asking. And then the whoever the guest is says something and a whole raft of new questions crops up. And that's where I'm about to go.
Go ahead.
The first thing I wanted to pick up on is I heard you mention it quite a few times just then, self-reflection. And then just now when you was talking about Samsung, I think you used the words deep introspection. I'm really curious to know, for you as a leader or for anybody aspiring to play at the highest level and perform at the highest level, for you, sort of what part does self-reflection play and how important is that to you and why? Just I'd love it just if you could talk to us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, and I learn a lot every day, and I think the journey I've been on, I've been lucky to meet some amazing people. I think in principle, my fundamental leadership philosophy is that my role is really, first of all, really you need to understand who you are, what your values are, what makes you tick. You also, more importantly, need to understand where you are weak. And I in all the roles I've had, my leadership roles, what I've tried to do is identify and recruit the best people. And I'm proud of the teams I've worked with across my career, in particular the team I have now in Samsung. They are an incredible bunch of people. And what's important is that they're not, of course, they're experts in their field, but they're also incredible leaders of the business. And I learn a lot from them. So knowing myself, don't try and fake being a leader. You have to be true to yourself and being authentic. Understand your weakness and surround yourself with the best people. I think my role ultimately as a leader is to continue to look for ways in which I can clear the way, to allow these individuals to grow, to be stretched, to develop. I clear the way for their opportunities and for them really to deliver what other people deem to be impossible. Not as individuals, of course, there's great satisfaction in achieving your own personal goals, but it's even more satisfying for me when I see this team working together. And I think any leader's role should be, I hate to say it, this is how I feel about it, is that you should ultimately try and make yourself redundant. And that would only happen if and only if you have the best team who are working together, innovative, creative, confident, challenging each other, you know, calling a spade a spade. And I think some people I would like to see measure my leadership based on what happens when I leave my job, as opposed to what I'm doing on my job. Because what I'm doing on my job is really the job I should be doing anyway. But if I've done a good job in creating a good foundation with the right people, it should grow without me. So that paving the way for succession plans and building that team, that really makes me proud. And that's what I like to do. And to achieve that, to your question, I think the self-introspection, you know, I don't think anyone has the answer. And I think early in my career, I felt as though maybe I had all the answers. And I remember someone said to me, Connor, in some coaching session, Connor, you know, you're impatient. You want things done quickly. So much so that when someone comes with a problem, you give them the answer. And that's not really creating a coaching environment or helping them unleash their full potential. So he said to me, think like a man of action and act like a man of thought, T-A-A-T. And I try and foster that because no matter how much pressure you're under to deliver a solution or get something done, you have to rely on your team and help them through it rather than sometimes, of course, you need to make the decision. But ultimately, I'm responsible for their decisions as well.
That's brilliant. I love that. Think like a man of action, act like a man of thought. And I think that's often one of the biggest challenges for leaders, especially as we move into more senior roles, is stepping away from just always giving people the solution. Because often we know the answer, right? Or we think we know the answer because we've been there before. But it's often quite hard to not do that. So again, I'm curious, what was it that actually enabled you to make that change and to hold back and act like a man of thought? Because it's not easy, is it? Because we want to jump in and give the answer. How did you make that change stick?
Yeah, it's difficult, I have to say. And I think I've become more, over the years, as I've surrounded myself with people who are far more intelligent than I am and far more capable than I am, I lean on them a lot more. And I also expect them to do their job and reach out to me for support if they need support. So I do have to remind myself at times, of course, because I have to bite my lip. So I'm trying to force myself to listen more. It gives me time to think as well, rather than just jumping into the weeds. Of course, especially when the business is under pressure, and Samsung, it works at a phenomenal speed with an overwhelming ambition to be number one today, not just tomorrow. So you're constantly looking for ways to improve the business. But I also tell my own team to push back on me.
Right.
No, it's very important, because I can get caught up in my own position and start giving directions or giving answers or solutions. And that really undermines their opportunity to lead and their opportunity to be creative. And I think also, and this is very important to me, I have a deep sense of responsibility, and I expect my team to do so, to have the same. That accountability is important. So they are accountable. An individual is accountable for their function, and they are therefore responsible for making the right decisions, not necessarily independently, but with support if they need. So I think that's how I manage it. One thing I probably need to do more of is ask for help.
Okay.
And I do ask my team for help a lot. That's not the point. But sometimes you need to think outside of your current organization and look for input and for perspective outside of your field of comfort. And I think everyone should do the same. You shouldn't be embarrassed to ask for help. In fact, I think it's humbling to be in a position where you know you need some support. And it's amazing where the best ideas come from.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. I often tell this story. You may even have heard me talk about it. But one of the most significant lessons from my leadership career was when I was preparing to go on a selection weekend to join the British Army. And there was a major from the Army coaching me. And he said, "Ben, when you're on the assessment center and you're given a brief for an exercise or task," said, "if you don't know what to do and you don't have a plan," he said, "that's absolutely fine." He said, "it's not your job as a leader to have all of the ideas and all of the answers." He said, "ask your team, use your team." So yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Do you know though, Ben, I'm sorry, because I know you have questions there. You just, I really appreciate the work that you've done with my team. They're so motivated, and with your coaching and support, certainly better leaders as a result of spending time with you. One of the stories I often hear from them, and you've also said it to me, is that this water bottle moment.
Right.
I won't steal your thunder, but it's an important moment, because in every personal life or business life, there's always moments where the pressure is so enormous that you must act. And you should be, in some cases, you're expected to act. And sometimes you make the wrong decision because you're acting rather than thinking. So just grabbing those few seconds or whatever it turns out to be, and sitting back, reflecting, looking around you, assessing the situation, recalibrating, and then delivering the direction. That's a really important learning, because especially in a stressful situation and a panic situation, you tend to just do something and you may regret it.
Yeah.
So I often say to my team, remember the water bottle moment that Ben refers to, and they all take a deep breath.
Brilliant. Thank you. So I've heard you talk about I've heard you talk about some of the things that are core to your leadership approach. So there's relationships and trust, this self-reflection piece, thinking like a man of action, but acting like a man of thought, which I love, and I'll use that myself in the future. I'm just wondering, are there any other core principles, models, frameworks that you use, you've learned over the years, that you rely heavily on as a leader?
Yeah, and maybe this is an opportunity just for me to reflect on my significant learning, and that is when I took on the role of MD of Nokia in Turkey. And again, also the same principle applies when I came into Nokia UK in 2011. And it was very difficult, because what happened there is I was more or less airlifted, if you like, into a tanker in the middle of an ocean that had you couldn't see the horizon for the storm that we were in. There were waves crashing over the sides. We were jettisoned.
We're speaking metaphorically, right?
Yeah. You can imagine, though, that was the environment I was brought in. And I was desperate to, I couldn't believe, how did I end up here? How could this business get so bad? Anyway, I remember reading about this, and there's three things I do now when I'm in the situation. One is set clear direction. Two is engage the team. And three is energize the team. And with those three things, of course, it happens in different time frames. if you use that structure, you will deliver. And I think as you go through these turnarounds, you get more experience, you get more confident, and you also use your gut feel, and you can assess the situation faster, and you can also assess the individuals faster. It becomes easier. But no transformation is easy, don't get me wrong, but you just become maybe more confident in it. So I think if I just elaborate on that, setting the direction. So there you are, imagine I'm the captain of this oil tanker in the middle of the ocean that's going to sink. I look at the horizon, I see no hope. I see no glimmer of light. But if I notice something in the horizon, I'm aiming for that, because the team have to have some form of direction to stand towards. And then I rally the troops by engaging them, saying, this is the direction we're going in. You know, we may go off, we may change course, but that's where we're going today, based on what I can assess the situation to be. And then as you go on that journey, you also understand who's on the bus or who's on the boat and not on the boat. You give everyone the benefit of the doubt, you raise the bar very high, and you expect people to perform. And then obviously you keep them energized by celebrating the low-hanging fruit, early successes. It's amazing the energy that creates and the bond within that team creates. Of course, not everyone's going to make it because it's too hard, or maybe they don't have the right competence. But I think one of my proudest moments was the team I built in Turkey, and I think the team I built in Nokia UK, and the current team, because when I came to Samsung UK, it also was in a difficult position in that it was primarily driving volume sell-in as its priority, not necessarily value to partners or focus on consumers. So we went through transformation. So on those three occasions, I followed those principles that stood to me. That's more like a business transformation. From my own personal leadership, there's a few things that I would call out. One is it's very important to be present. And when I say present, it's not just being in the room physically. It's being present. You're there's no distraction. You've taken your, I don't bring my phone into meetings. I don't bring my laptop into meetings. I'm listening. If I have a distraction, human nature is that, oh, I will look at my email or something. Just be present. You only have so much time. You've got too many meetings per day. And it also allows you to, I focus on the topic. First one. Second one is listen. Again, to my point, listen for longer, trying to be this, act like a man of thought, listen. And I think one of the other ones, especially during COVID, I find it very difficult because we were obviously all working from home, doing Zoom calls or Microsoft Teams calls for 10 hours a day, and your body would just crumple. So I think everyone needs to find their source of energy. And there are four types of energy. There's physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And everyone needs a bucket of each. And it drains at different speeds for different people. But if it's physical energy you require, go for a walk in the morning. Carve yourself some time and make sure that you're able to keep those buckets filled, because it's incredibly draining being a leader. And people in a crisis look to you for the person who's going to make the decisions and keep that motivation and morale up. I think the final one I would call out is, no matter how dark the situation appears, and I would always say to my team, there's always a way, we're just not thinking properly. And I speak a lot about Ernest Shackleton.
Yes.
The famous adventurer. He's a very famous quote that I often say. I think my team are bored listening to me. And his quote was, obstacles are just things to overcome after all. So I think that hopefully that gives you a flavor of how I lead, and some advice to people who are looking to grow their career as well.
It's fantastic, Connor, and actually you've pretty much answered one of the next questions that I was going to ask. I was certainly going to pick up on it after you mentioned it, which is this whole piece around energy. So to your metaphor analogy of being on that ship and setting the direction, giving people energy, Where does your energy come from? What do you do to look after yourself? And what are some of the things that you do to keep your four energy sources topped up?
Yeah, I think the primary source of my energy is people. And I do genuinely miss that human interaction, because we're obviously still in lockdown mode. I'm currently in self-isolation, as I mentioned to you. So I am looking forward to getting back to the office and being with my team again. I get a genuine source of energy there. But outside of the office, I, as you know, I always try and challenge myself physically and mentally. And every year since the year 2000, I've gone on some form of expedition somewhere in the world for charity. And it brings me to far-flung places that I didn't know existed. for a few reasons I do that. One is because it gives me huge perspective, because it's very easy to become to get locked up in that bubble, that corporate bubble, and that's all you see and that's all you know. And going out into the world, for example, trekking across the Sahara in the year 2000 with the Berbers, I can still remember it. And I can still remember how raw their life was, how simple their life was, and how happy they are. And then I see some of the challenges that we face in our first world, they're not problems. So it just grounds you, if you like. The second reason why I do that is obviously I have a passion for helping a particular charity. So I do spend some time looking for ways in which I can raise money for them. And thirdly, it's an incredible source of physical and mental satisfaction to do something you thought was impossible. Climb a mountain or cross a desert or whatever it turns out to be. So, and I've met some amazing people on that. And, you know, back to my work mode, and every year I've done that since the year 2000. But in the last few years, as you know, Ben, I've also managed to recruit some willing adventurers within my own team under the Samsung Do What You Can't motto. And we've managed to climb, we've done the five peaks in 48 hours on two occasions for charity, the Lilly Foundation, and which is really gruesome, actually. That's a really tough challenge. But we all made it as a team. It was fabulous. And last year I brought 12 people up Mont Blanc, and some of them had never stepped foot on the mountain before. And for me, my role was to get them to the top safely and back again safely. But I was so proud of them, to the point of there were many tears shed on top of the mountain, for people to actually achieve something that was completely outrageous thought for them before. So I love just, I have a huge belief that there's so much more potential in everyone. And I just want to show the way, protect them and help them achieve that, because they'll be proud of that moment forever.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm very conscious of your time, Conor. We've got about 5 minutes left. There's a couple of just quick fire questions I'd love to ask you. Before I do, though, I love your whole piece around a challenge every year, because it gives you perspective. What would you say, though, to those people, those leaders who might not understand quite as much the benefits that it provides, the people who say, oh, that's great, Conor, that's great, Ben, but I simply don't have time to go off and do a 2-week challenge or expedition every year. What would you say to those people?
Yeah, well, I think everyone makes choices with their own time. So I think if you wanted to do this, you could find time. But that's just a general statement. You know, you don't need to go and climb a mountain or cross a desert. You know, I'm maybe quite unique in that, but there are many ways in which you can stretch yourself. And I think the day you stop learning is the day you stop leading. So whether that's learning a new skill set, and you know, we're all on a journey now to become digitalized, if you like, through whether it's video conferencing or online platforms, which of course many businesses are relying on now to keep us above water, and it's growing very well. But I'm now 50, and I definitely grew up more in an analog world than a digital world. So I would urge people to lean into whatever makes them most uncomfortable. Okay. Especially if it's blatantly obvious that there's a huge opportunity for growth in online platforms, etc. Or if you want to bring your team on a leadership journey, as we did recently, Ben, through the COVID crisis, we had this kind of mini PhD, if you'd like to call it, on how to lead and communicate as a leadership team during a crisis like that. There's so many ways in which you can make yourself positively uncomfortable. And I think the more uncomfortable you are, the more you will stretch yourself and the more you learn about yourself.
Brilliant. What's one of the most significant books you've read from a business leadership perspective over the years?
I'll go back to my dear friend, Ernest Shackleton, not just because he's an Irish fella. So I would certainly urge, maybe you can add a link to this on the book, but there he has obviously a very famous story called Endurance, when the name of the boat they used to bring him to the Antarctic to cross it, to be the first person to cross the Antarctic in 1916. But that's a good adventure story. But actually, what's even more interesting is there's a book, Leadership Lessons from Ernest Shackleton. And I've actually bought that book for my leadership team. And we go, only because I'm a big fan of his, but also not just because he's a great leader, but actually, what could he have done differently? What mistakes did he make as a leader? And I was lucky enough to spend a week in Harvard Business School with Samsung. And one of the case studies we spent a half a day talking about was Ernest Shackleton and the mistakes he made.
Wow. Great. And last question, Connor, what are you reading or learning right now?
Well, I don't know whether I'm learning it or not. I recently started beekeeping. Can you imagine? You may not know that, but my mother's been beekeeping for probably 40 years, and I've been a failed apprentice for many occasions. And I brought with my landlord a few hives last year in England, and I'm on this journey to learn how to beekeep. My mum says beekeeping is like playing chess with nature, except the bees keep changing the rules. Yeah, I enjoyed that though.
Brilliant.
The book I'm reading is called The Korean War by Dan Hastings. It's a fascinating insight into why Korea behaves the way it does now. It's really interesting. And it's obviously a horrific war, but a really strong insight into their history and the journey they've been on to become one of the most successful and innovative countries in the world.
Brilliant. I think perhaps in the future, we might need to see if we can have a follow-up episode to talk about that, to talk about beekeeping expeditions, and maybe we could even talk about Lego.
Good. I like Lego. Thank you, Ben.
So there you have it, folks. My interview with Connor Pierce, Corporate Vice President, Samsung Electronics, UK and Ireland. I said at the start that I thought you'd absolutely love this episode, and I really hope that was true for you. And if it was useful, it would be amazing if you could share out the link to this episode across your social media, as it really does help us grow the podcast and build the following so we can keep bringing you more episodes. And don't forget the bonus feature I'm offering you. I've been working with an incredibly talented sketch artist over in Italy to create a fantastic visual summary of all of the first 5 episodes. If you'd like to get hold of these, simply type www.ben-morton/podcast directly into your web browser, and you'll be able to sign up and get those visual summaries sent straight into your inbox. That's it for this episode. I'll see you in the next one. Take care and lead on, folks.